Welcome to the Frequency 49 show. I'm Paul McDonald alongside Brian Davis and Gary Rutledge. Deepak is kind of with us in a way. He's feeling quite rough at the moment, so we hope he's going to be getting better soon. He's got no voice, so he's going to be texting us his comments and we're going to read it out. How this show's going to work, I don't know, but there it is. Hello, gents, anyway.
Good evening.
Hi, Paul. How you doing?
Not so bad. Gary, you're out in Florida at the moment, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm out in Orlando, full of cold as well, but not as bad as Deepak, so I'll do my best to contribute via voice.
How the hell you can go to Florida and end up with a cold? Mind you, you've gone on airlines, haven't you, so you get any kind of bug there. So, right, the San Francisco 49ers returned from bye week with Blaine Gabbert confirmed as starting quarterback again. His above-expectation performance against Atlanta before the bye gave hope against the Seahawks, and on the whole, didn't really disappoint with 22 passes on 34 attempts for 264 yards and a touchdown. Torrey Smith was virtually silenced by dedicated motor-mouth Richard Sherman, while Vance McDonald shocked everyone by appearing to understand that he was supposed to catch the ball and even scored a touchdown once he got it. Defensively, the 49ers laid out the welcome mat at the end zone for Seattle, giving up four touchdowns in the game that Bowman and co. were never really in. Spaghetti-armed tackling meant that the Seattle offense were in complete control of the game, with the 49ers playing catch-up. On special teams, Bruce Ellington again demonstrated his prowess at waving his arms around like a demented airplane wrangler, calling fair catch on all but one punt, continually giving the 49ers starting positions dangerously close to that end zone welcome mat. The eventual final score of 29-13 made this game look much more competitive than it really was, to be honest. Would you agree with that, Brian?
Yeah, absolutely. The 2015 49ers continuing to lose with class. At 20-0 down, I thought we had a little decent period there. The likelihood of that probably being that Seattle probably already knew that they had the game won before we even got anywhere near to half time. And then after that little period, I don't think we were particularly good at all, were we? Probably for the remainder of the game. They started with three straight touchdown drives, which was pretty much that was game, set, and match for them. Seattle eased up at that point, and I think they just kind of went through the motions of making sure that they weren't getting any injuries, and the 49ers pretty much did the same. I think that they almost resigned themselves to the defeat at that point. They continued to coach like they were scared, and unfortunately, it just wasn't a particularly great game from the very off, really.
Before I forget, Brian, I've got a little present for you.
Okay.
It's an audio present.
Okay.
All right, you're listening. You've wanted this for a while.
Brain is a real American, leading the fight. Let's win tonight.
I couldn't help it. I had to. You've been wanting that and wanting it. So there you go. It's on the show now.
Fantastic.
Blaine Gabbert, he did have a decent game, didn't he?
He was okay, wasn't he? He was serviceable.
Deepak said Gabbert did as much as he could do, and in fact, he's done more against Seattle than Cap has for the last three games versus Seattle combined, which is an interesting stat. I hadn't realised it was quite that much. But let's have a look. What were his stats again? I did just read them out.
22 of 34, wasn't it? 264 yards and a TD.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a decent performance, really, isn't it, for any quarterback?
Yeah, so, and, you know, against, you know, Seattle, in Seattle is a very good performance. And, you know, he was using his legs again. And the great thing to see was he led us on a two-minute drill. That's something that we just haven't been able to master for God knows how long.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty serviceable. He did what was expected of him, didn't he, really? He didn't turn the ball over. He managed the game relatively nicely and took what he was given for the majority of the time. Unfortunately, I think the coaching was so poor again on the evening, where they were coaching scared, that he could have done and played or been allowed to play much better. But unfortunately, like I say, the coaching staff are just coaching completely scared right now. And it probably wouldn't have made any difference had he been let loose or turned loose, if you can really turn Blaine Gabbert loose. But I just think the coaching staff are coaching for their lives right now in a bad way.
As always, we've asked for questions from people that followed the group after the game. And we like to bring them in as we're talking about a particular subject. As we're talking about this, the playing safe and stuff, Mark Lyon, twice on fourth and relatively short inside the Seattle 10, down by 13. We ended up going for field goals. Is this cautious play calling or too cautious play calling, or is it the correct approach just to get points on the board? And if you were the head coach, would you have gone for it on either of those occasions?
I think on this occasion, normally we advocate of sevens, not threes, but I think on this occasion that, you know, we were completely shell-shocked by going three touchdowns down. So I think it was good to get some points on the board. And, you know, we did get within 10 at one point, and there was a glimmer of hope there. But, yeah, I think normally it would have been nice to have gone for it, but I think just to get some boost some confidence and, you know, I think we've scored more points against them than we have for quite a while. I think it was the last time we scored that many points was the championship game. So we've certainly made progress there. And, you know, at this point in time, I'd take points rather than nothing at all.
The coaching staff are playing to not lose too badly, which is quite frankly pathetic in the National Football League. They're coaching for their jobs and not to win games. They're not playing to be competitive. They go weak at the knees in the end zone. At one point in the game on Sunday night, we were, first and goal at the seven? And I don't think we made three passes, but we didn't make one throw into the end zone at all. And they've got to start taking chances and trusting and putting their faith into the quarterback in those situations and pushing for touchdowns. And moving on, into the fourth quarter, I really don't understand the mentality of punting when you're two touchdowns down. You know, this has happened three or four times now this season, and in that situation, every drive should be four down territory, even if it is in our own half, even if it is at our own 15, 20 yard line, like we were with a couple of minutes left. They're coaching as if they're two scores up, and they're playing the field position game. And effectively putting the game back into the hands of our defense to stop them, which our defense for the majority of the evening hadn't stopped them at all. I think it was we punted with 5:45 and with 3:09 left in the fourth quarter. You just can't do it. I'd rather lose 36-13 going for it than to lose 29-13 and think, well, that wasn't a too bad a defeat. Even if it's 43-13, it doesn't matter. And I think we said this in our first podcast or second podcast. You can't polish the turd, but that's pretty much what we're trying to settle for every week at the moment. And then, right, they've got the nerve to take timeouts on defense after punting. All they're doing there is they're prolonging the agony for the fans. This isn't coaching. This is like just the lowest form of self-preservation coaching that there is. This is purely Jim Tom Sula's thinking, well, we only lost it by 16 in Seattle. Stuff that. I'll go, you know, let's go and get completely blown out going to get points, not just a slight defeat by 15, 16 points, if you want to call it that. They're just purely coaching for their own jobs next season now, this coaching staff, and it's quite frankly pathetic.
On the subject of the fourth and short, Deepak said it's always easy to second guess fourth and short after the event, which I can agree with, yeah, but we already know that this season's over. Surely, you know, you want some spark of inspiration. You want something. Okay, you know, if even if you're going in expecting to lose the game against Seattle, at least make a fight of it. Don't lie down, which is what we seem to have done in this game yesterday. The offense had a relatively decent game. But the defense, as you said, the defense was diabolical. Graham Ross has had a question, similar question to what I was going to ask, actually. Graham Ross has said, why is the defense so inconsistent, restricting a leading running back to a 12 yards in one game and then giving up 200-plus to a backup in the next? And the question I was going to say was, at times this season, the offense has looked woeful and the defense has had to pick up the slack. Now, the opposite's true. We obviously have the talent on both sides of the ball for that to happen. But why can't both sides turn up on the same day?
Well, I think Bowman's come out and said that they prepared for 24 and 24 didn't play, which I think is an awful excuse. At the end of the day, you know, if you're preparing for, you know, one of the best running backs in the league in Marshawn Lynch, and you get somebody, you know, who's an undrafted free agent, then surely your run defense should be at its absolute max, because he's not that much of a different player. And I think they were saying that he carries the ball further, whereas Lynch is just harder to bring down. But I think that's, you know, I think it's sorry to say, because, you know, I've got ultimate respect for Bowman. I think he's been our best player this season. But to say, you know, we kind of didn't prepare properly is a horrible excuse.
Yeah, Bowman said himself that they prepared for Lynch and not for this undrafted free agent that came into the team and rushed for 208 yards. That's the most that the 49ers have ever given up to a running back. They've never allowed a rusher to go for over 200 yards on them, ever. And yeah, like I said, Tom Sula said that they prepared for Rawls, but Bowman in his post-game speech said that they prepared for Lynch. So there's communication breakdown going on within the coaching staff and the message that they're getting out to the players. And as a backup stat, that was the most rushing yards we've given up since 1978, which was before I was born.
And this guy was undrafted. Thanks, Deepak, for that information. This player, Rawls, was undrafted as well.
Yeah.
Which you've got to say, by Seattle, is a hell of a pickup.
I think was it only the second rusher to go over, undrafted free agent rusher to go over 200 yards in the history of the NFL?
I think so, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Andy Smith has said, our defense has played atrociously all game. The front seven made Seattle's horrific O-line look elite. We've allowed an undrafted rookie to run for more yards than any other in a single game ever. With 3-6, down by 16 to our bitterest rivals with 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Do we go for it? No. Tom Sula decides to punt the ball back to them. So a simple question for him. Is Tom Sula being instructed to lose games, you know, theoretically, to get a better draft position? Or is he actually that bad as a head coach? Either way, is it now time for Tom Sula to go?
I think with regards to instructs to lose games, I think I said a few podcasts ago that I'd hate to think that that's actually been an order that's been issued, because I don't think anybody in the NFL would play like that. I think, you know, it really undermines the game if it were doing that just to try and get the first draft pick. I think Brian touched on it earlier on that, you know, the coaches may be playing not to get, you know, keep their jobs and not to get ultimately absolutely hammered, which again is a sad state of affairs. You know, there's a difference between, you know, going for threes and not sevens, rather than, you know, just punting the ball away when you're on fourth down and, you know, 16 points behind. So it's certainly disappointing there, because, you know, we need to take a few more chances, because I think, as you both said, the season's over. You know, we need to try at least, you know, turn some of these fourth downs into points and at least get the egg off our faces in some cases.
Yeah, and Tom Sula is Jed and Trent's fall guy, isn't he? It's plain and simple. The trouble is, we appear to be heading towards this kind of the sort of wash, rinse, recycle, or whatever the phrase is, pattern that they want a yes man in. They clearly aren't bothered about putting the winning products on the field. Otherwise, Jim would still be here. And we spoke about Sean Payton, was it in last week's podcast, maybe the week before? I think at this moment in time, we can forget that. He's going to want too much control. And with these two buffoons in charge, we've got no hope of attracting anyone of Sean Payton's capability. And let's face it, many of us here in the UK called this, maybe not quite as bad as this season has been, but not being funny, if we can see what the problems are from over 5,000 miles away, why can nobody in the franchise see what's going on?
Deepak said that Tom Sula was hired especially to be fired, and it wouldn't surprise him if he was aware of this when he agreed to be the head coach. So basically, it was a one-year head coach contract.
Problem is, he's never going to get another head coaching job, is he, if after this? He's been royally hung out to dry, hasn't he?
Sure, you know, surely, even games like this where, you know, people around the league are seeing him absolutely tank a game, surely anybody that's looking for a head coach is going to be saying, okay, that's a guy that goes for it, or that's a guy that doesn't go for it. And at the moment, Tom Sula is a guy that doesn't go for it. You know, he's not going to be hireable if he does move on from the 49ers. Where's he going to end up?
I think the question you've got to ask is, will he be a head coach if he gets moved on? You know, I can't see him, you know, after this experience, wanting to step out and be the, you know, the man above the parapet. I think he'd be quite happy to be a defensive coordinator or even go back to his defensive line duties, but I can't see him wanting to be a head coach.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think he's going to have to take two steps back, get back to being a defensive line coach somewhere, maybe with that kind of interim tag that former head coaches in the NFL get as the kind of the assistant head coach or whatever it is that they're calling them these days, and work his way back up.
Mark Lyons asked a question about this. This isn't the first time we've questioned team commitments or complained that they just haven't turned up. How much of this is linked to having a player's coach? And does being a nice guy adversely affect the team mentally?
Well, Tom Sula's a great position guy, as I think we might have just touched on that just now. And clearly he's a great guy, but it's clear to me now that he's way, way out of his depth as a head coach. And right now the 49ers do need a motivational sort of type rah-rah guy to fire them up, because unfortunately Tom Sula's apparent nice guy approach clearly isn't delivering results. And for me, right now, unfortunately, I'd say he's got to become the full guy sooner rather than later. These things tend to not happen too much during the season. But there certainly isn't anyone on the coaching staff now that I would be happy with promoting them up. So I think, unfortunately, we're going to be stuck with this situation through to the end of December, start of January. And ultimately, I think it's time that Trent Baalke was sacked as well. It's time that somebody somewhere in the York family intervenes and tries to save what was a once proud franchise from another decade of being pretty much the down and out punchline to people's joke, a franchise living in a land of self-pity. I don't know, like a downtrodden, down and out f***ing tramp. That's about the best I can put it.
Deepak said on that sort of subject, is it down to Tom Sula being the type of coach he is? Deepak, but no, the decay and dysfunction in the front office is eventually manifesting itself in team performance. What's happening on the field is a direct series of knock-on events that Jed started, including coaches, administrators and players. With that in mind, should Jed York be back out making a statement or an apology, or has it now got way beyond that?
We're way beyond it now.
Gary, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree, Brian. I think we're way beyond it. As you know, it's going to be too little too late if he comes out and does that. He needs to take some action. Maybe, you know, like we talked about, I think last podcast before, he's getting an advisor for Tom Sula and show him that he's not just hanging him out to dry. He's going to bring somebody experienced in who, you know, can maybe give the whole team a boost and somebody they respect, and at least try and, you know, get something out of this season, whether it be, you know, a couple of wins against maybe Chicago or Cleveland, and maybe pick up another one somewhere. So if we can end up with 6 wins, it's not quite the disaster that we've all expected, certainly at this stage.
I think picking up a 4th and 5th and possibly 6th win would be a disaster for us personally. I think the effort now should be ultimately to try and secure a top 3 draft pick. Currently we're sitting 6, and look at the teams picking higher than us, and I think nearly all of them are probably currently better than us right now. Could we beat Cleveland? Maybe. That's probably a coin toss game. San Diego, possibly the same. Tennessee, probably not. I don't think we're better than Tennessee. Baltimore, I would have probably said not, but now knowing now that Flacco's done for the year, we're probably going to be back on a par with them, and we weren't really too far away from each other when we beat them back in earlier days this season. Detroit, unlikely unless they send a team that came to Wembley, because that was a disaster zone. And then it's us. So at the minute, we're in a position to get a top pick, or at least in that top 2 to 3. And a win or two from us can move us way down the draft order. We might even be in no man's land in the middle.
But you say that, Brian, but is there much point having a top draft pick if we've, you know, we've got a GM doesn't seem to know what to do with it? So,
well,
you
this
know,
this is why I'm
is
thinking.
That really the answer?
This is why I'm thinking now that Baalke ultimately needs to fall on his sword or be sacked as well, because his draft classes are falling apart at the seams, and to me they're almost like an embarrassing, ripped open, seam busting, exposing everything. You know, I think the best thing that can happen now, if the rumours are true, that unfortunately, as hard as it is to watch, is that we completely fall off the cliff, we go into a tailspin, we get roundly d***ed by the rest of the league the rest of the way. That way it will force a coaching change on somebody to make that coaching change, and maybe even that change at the top, and it then be a time to start with a clean, fresh page, no Baalke, no Tom Sula, and hopefully no interfering from Jed York, because ultimately this is all Jed's fault. And Jed, he is accountable, and you want us to hold you accountable, and I'm holding you accountable, and we're holding you accountable, so do the right thing, and resign, or disappear, or let someone come in and take control of the football operations, and take Baalke with you, or push him to break your fall, because enough is enough. And Trent should be taking some of this accountability too, because his drafting success has been woeful. I mean, 2011's class has already gone. Alden, Cap, Culliver, Hunter in the first four rounds, they all sparkled a bit. But three of those, it's kind of spiralled out of control. Hunter's not even on the team anymore. He had a couple of late hits, Kilgore, Miller. So you can say that was a bit of a disaster zone now looking at it, because all we've got to show for it is a centre and a fullback. 2012's class was possibly in the running for the worst draft class of all time. AJ Jenkins shunned Jerry Rice, which was obviously a complete major red flag. Michael James was a nuisance. Looney was a wasted pick, and we didn't even get one late round hit in that. 2013, Eric Reid was brilliant in his first year, but concussions have already slowed him down. Vance McDonald at second looks awful value. Tank Carradine, they still don't know what his best position is. They can't even suit him up on a Sunday. Lemonnier and Patton, league average guys, really. Lattimore, again, was a wasted pick. And all the late-round guys after Dial have moved on since then. And it's too early to look at 2014 and 2015, but even 2014's first-round pick, Jimmy Ward. Mike Mayock had this guy in the third round. He hasn't delivered first-round quality. Baalke's a mess. It's an absolute mess. It's embarrassing.
It's odd, isn't it? Because Trent Baalke is known for building up a whole bucket full of draft picks, yet he can't do anything with them.
No, I think as Brian said, we've had all these picks and we're not picking quality players for the majority of it. And there isn't any point in stockpiling these picks because, you know, if we know we're just going to waste them as long as Baalke's in charge, then, you know, it doesn't matter where we finish because even if we have the number one pick, you know, are we necessarily going to get the player that's number one caliber, or he's going to, you know, throw it away and then be in the same position as an endless cycle for the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah,
Baalke's looked at what the Patriots have done a number of years in stockpiling picks and picking up decent guys off the street and in sixth, seventh round that come into their team and contribute. But unfortunately for Baalke, he's not as good as the New England Patriots. That theory is great if you know what you're doing. Trent Baalke doesn't know what he's doing.
Deepak's messaged in again. The conspiracist in me says Jed wants to remove every single trace of anyone associated with the club from the San Francisco era. Watch Bowman retire in the off-season. Jed can then start his Santa Clara 49ers. I honestly can't think of another reason why Jed was allowed to consistently make wrong decisions after wrong decisions and why nobody stopped him. We are sort of treading into the conspiracy theories now, aren't we? Because no matter what, you know, no matter what the public says, no matter what the media says, no matter what common sense says, they are still making ridiculously stupid decisions for no apparent reason. On the field, off the field, everything.
Yeah, I think it's got to the stage where it is becoming more of a commercial enterprise rather than a fun NFL franchise. And yeah, everyone's in it for the money at the end of the day. But, you know, to focus on, and I know Deepak said this many a times, to focus on getting Levi's set up and, you know, just with the whole commercial side of Levi's, how it's structured and how, you know, trying to bring in the corporate side rather than, you know, focus on the fans, moving the stadium, you know, so far out of San Francisco, they may as well just move it to LA and taking that franchise. You know, it is quite disappointing. That's the way such a storied franchise is heading, that it's now just down to money rather than, you know, what we're seeing on the field. And I hope that, you know, Jeb's mum and dad step in and sort of say, look, you've been playing with these toys long enough, you've broken them. You know, we're going to give them to somebody else who can fix them and, you know, make the best use of them.
What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I think I've pretty much covered most of my bits that I wanted to say previously. I think it's all Jed and Trent's fault. And the longer these two buffoons are at the franchise, we ain't going anywhere, unfortunately.
Hello to Rebecca Cooley Schmall. I hope I've said that right. She said, it looks grim, but we've been here before. We will rise from the burnt ashes like a phoenix rises. Hashtag the Niner Empire out of Fresno. So great to have you guys listening out there in California. Thanks very much for joining us. Change tack just slightly. Kaepernick.
Huh.
So much has gone on with Kaepernick over the past, what, 3, 4, 5 weeks. Now he is on injured reserve. He's elected to have surgery on his non-throwing arm. Is that the end for Kaepernick now? Is he gone?
I think it is. It's clear. Again, another pitiful disaster zone from the front office and from Kaepernick as well. I think they've both got parts to play in this, and I think they're both playing off on each other now. I think somehow the 49ers medical staff have let a guy quarterback the team with a torn shoulder muscle since week 4. And on the other hand, Kaepernick clearly hasn't fully owned up to this injury. And now that he's been benched, he's thrown his toys out the pram and he's demanding surgery. This, again, is all about his own self-preservation and ensuring that he gets paid. And that's being paid by either the 49ers as a quarterback next season or by somebody else as a starting quarterback if we can trade him, if he can pass his fitness test before the 1st of April, or if he's released, or, again, if we pay him up under some form of injury settlement before releasing him. So, again, this is another mess instigated by Jed York, and another sign, as Deepak touched on there, that he's burying absolutely anything and everything to do with Jim Harbaugh under the carpet and wipe that era clean off the face of planet Earth. The guy can't even hang our Super Bowl banners in our stadium. And again, it's just a sign that he's a petty child, and Kaepernick was Jim's guy, therefore Jim's gone, so now Kaep must go. Let's be clear for some of the uneducated people out there, this is not the fans or anyone forcing Kaepernick out. This is purely the front office. This isn't haters getting their way, because that's not how it works. This is Jed getting his way, and it's as simple as that. If people can't work that out, then they need their internet logins disabled. Kaepernick wasn't even on the injury list until Friday. So if this was handled in the right way, he would have had surgery back sometime after week 4, and he would have certainly shown up on the injury report every week since taking that injury against Green Bay.
Deepak said Kaepernick is done. He'll never play for the 49ers again. And he's added that the NFL needs to investigate the Kaepernick on IR fiasco. There's so many kinds of wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's just all very suspicious, isn't it? Like you say, he's been put on the bench. He's not happy being put on the bench. Now this injury's come out. Is it just a tactic to get the money out of him? Or is it that he was genuinely injured? We just don't know. And surely this whole fiasco has tainted Kaepernick. We were saying before that it's tainted Tom Sula and the likelihood of him getting a head coaching job anywhere else if he leaves the 49ers is hampered by it. Surely this whole fiasco affects Kaepernick as well and taints him as a future franchise quarterback elsewhere.
Well, I think, you know, both Kaepernick and the 49ers need to fire their PR staff, because, you know, they've done such a bad job. They had the perfect chance when they dropped Kaepernick for Kaepernick to come out and say, actually, guys, I've been injured. You know, kind of like how Peyton Manning situations unfolded. I've been injured. I'm going to go and have surgery. It's my season over, but that explains my bad performances this season. But to wait 2 weeks and then suddenly he's on IR just shows that, you know, that between them, they can't get their story straight. And yeah, like you said, Paul, it's done Kaepernick's rep, you know, a lot of damage, and the 49ers as well.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Kaepernick will get another starting role somewhere in the NFL. There's enough bad quarterbacks in the NFL right now that Kaepernick is easily better than them. And even he may end up on a team like somewhere like Denver or New England, maybe not New England, but a team where there's a franchise quarterback in place, where potentially, again, with a season on the sidelines learning with proper coaches who can coach football, and he'll be lighting up the NFL again for some team somewhere in 2016 or 2017. I've got absolutely no doubt about that at all.
Right, we're getting to that point in the show where it is time for our 2-minute drill, which is our quick fire questions. Are you ready, guys?
Let's do it.
Yep.
Okay. Is Gabbert the future or a stopgap? That one's Gary.
I think he's a stopgap for this season, but
you know, he's only had two games. He's got a chance to showcase himself. And again, it really depends where we end up, what draft pick we end up with.
Brian, are we really better off after benching Kaepernick?
Oh, I think we're pretty much as we were, weren't we? Gabbert's got some pluses going for him. Kaepernick probably had the beating of Atlanta in him. It would have probably come out the same had Kaepernick played in Seattle. Kaepernick has only thrown for more than 200 yards once in seven starts versus Seattle, so I reckon we're probably about where we would have been anyway. I don't think at this moment in time there's any difference.
Gary, back to you. Should we be looking for the number one pick now?
No, I completely think that's wrong. I think we need to keep fighting as much as we can. If we end up with the number one pick because we're that poor, so be it. But no, we can't give up the season. You've got to keep, you know, we've still got six games left. We need to try and at least get a couple more wins, three wins out the rest of the season.
With that in mind, Brian, will the Niners get another win this season?
I can't see it. Really can't see it.
Back to Gary. Are the Panthers the NFC lock for Super Bowl 50?
No, I don't think so. I think I still have a feeling that Green Bay are going to sneak up and nudge them out. Be interesting to see what happens on Thanksgiving with the Panthers, whether they lose that winning record or not.
Brian, back to you. Will there be an undefeated team in the Super Bowl?
No.
And last one back to Gary. Is Peyton Dunne and is Brock Osweiler the future of the Broncos?
Brock Osweiler. Well, it isn't the future, I don't think. Again, he's only got... that is harsh. I'll start until I'll finish. I think Brock's... You know, he's only he's only got a one-game sample size. I think we'll see Peyton come back towards the end of the season or early next season just to, you know, go out in style.
Okay, so that's the two-minute drill wrapped up. Deepak was actually messaging responses to the two-minute drill questions as we were going along. It's quite funny. I can't read them out there because there's some sweary words in there. Very, very naughty, Deepak. Go and wash your mouths out with some of that firewater or whatever you have. Right, we normally try to finish on a high point. We changed that just a little bit. We're trying something new out called the good, the bad, and the ugly. Are you ready for this, guys? Because we've got to actually find a good point, a bad point, and an ugly point for this game. I've got mine in mind. So we'll go around the room, and we'll go with the good first. Brian, what was your good point?
Vance McDonald, how about that? Who knew?
Definitely a good point. The man can catch, finally.
Yeah, well, I didn't think he could catch a cold.
Gary, what was your good point?
Yeah, similar theme. The 92-yard drive under the two-minute drill to get that Vance McDonald touchdown. You know, something we've not done for a while. So, yeah, good to see that.
Deepak's good point. We don't have to play Seattle again this season. I don't know whether that counts as a good point, Deepak. It really don't. My good point, Gabbert. Not just Gabbert's overall play, his legs. The man can run as well. And it was interesting to see him being able to extend plays where the pocket had broken down or where his reads were no good. And he was making decent yards, getting out to the sideline as well. Intelligent play there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that point. And probably just a nominal mention for Sean Drone. I think he ran pretty hard at times. He was an option out of the backfield for Gabbert, which is going to be essential for the rest of the season. So maybe just to try and up some positivity on the podcast, we'll put a fourth one in, shall we?
Why not? Or a fifth one, actually. bad points. Come on. Let's have the worst of it. Brian, what was your bad point from the game?
There are so many. There are absolutely so many. I'll go... Let's go with something we haven't really covered too much. Pinion, his punting, it's not worthy of a fifth round pick, is he? He's pretty awful at times. In the amount of times he's been coming forward to have to kick the ball this season, he should be rewarding us with much better field position than what he's currently doing. There were so many other options we could have had in that fifth round that Bauke could have wasted picks on.
Okay, and Gary?
Yeah, I was going to go with special teams and talk about Ellington, but I think I'm just going to have to go with our run defence. You know, 10 missed tackles in the game. That's absolutely shocking, not acceptable. And, you know, after the performance the week before against Atlanta, you know, we just dropped off the scale this week.
Deepak's bad point was the gutless play calling. Have to agree with that one. But my bad point has to be Ellington. I think he, not just in yesterday's game, I think he's been shocking all season. And I've said this time and time again, I don't see the point in calling a fair catch on the 8-yard line. You may as well just play the odds and see if it bounces into the end zone. If it bounces to the 4 and gets down at the 4, you're not much worse than you were at the 8, let's face it. So you may as well play the odds and see if you get a lucky bounce on it. Calling a fair catch at the 8-yard line and at the 12-yard line, ridiculous for me. That's my bad point. On to the ugly. I don't really understand what the difference is going to be between bad plays and ugly plays. But we'll go for it, Emery. Brian, what's your ugly?
Well, Deepak was quite kind by saying the play calling in bad, really. I'd have probably had to play call in the general coaching in the ugly. I'm going to say Michael Wilhoit was pretty goddamn ugly Sunday night, wasn't it? He should have been made to walk home. That was a dreadful performance.
And Gary, what's yours?
I'm going to say the personal foul call on Quinton Patton after he downed Lockett on that punt return. You know, it was a fantastic hit, and I think the whole team high-fived him as he went back on the sideline. But the fact it was called a personal foul really made it end up ugly.
Yeah, there was absolutely nothing wrong with that at all.
There was a lot of bad calls yesterday on the game, especially holding calls on the Seattle line, I think, every play. But, you know, this has been talked about before with other teams as well. The Seattle line will hold on every single play, knowing that the referees won't call them on every single play. And that is infuriating. Deepak's ugly, basic lack of execution of fundamentals and horrible tackling. I agree with him on the horrible tackling. Spaghetti arms, ridiculous. It wasn't until something like 4 minutes left in the game where they actually started to wrap up players. Just, you cannot tackle in the way that they were. They were overextending. They were, you know, they weren't looking for the ball. They were going beyond it. Just ridiculous play, I think.
Yeah, you would have thought that Marshawn Lynch was actually playing Sunday night with the amount of missed tackles that were going on out there. It was something that maybe Jared Haynes should try and teach them.
Going back to Ellington, I would happily see Ellington benched and Jared Hayne brought in as the punt returner. Okay, we risk some fumbles, but he's not going to be fair catching at the 8. I would rather see him come in with the challenge of getting some decent yards and starting positions down the field with the possibility of a few fumbles rather than guaranteed starting at the 8, backed up near your own end zone.
Yeah, make a name for yourself. And if this coaching staff aren't here next season, at least you've proved yourself in the NFL. If he doesn't get a chance this season and the 49ers change coaches, someone else might come in and think, no, I'm not going to bother wasting a roster spot on that. I'm going to go straight down the line and pick who I want on the team. So this is the chance for Hayne to be banging on the coach's door right now and saying, play me, play me, play me.
Quickly, before we come to the end of the show, which is fast approaching, Thanksgiving games are coming up on Thursday night, Friday morning of this week. And as part of our pick six, we've extended it for this week. So we're going to be picking all three games for the Thanksgiving games. Let's go round them now. Brian first, Eagles at Lions. Who have you got in that one?
Oh, two really bad teams. I think the Eagles just got blown up by the Bucks, didn't they? Oh. This could be Kev Nalen's tie game, this one. Can I go for the tie?
If you want to go for the tie, you go for the tie.
No, I think I'll pick the Lions to squeak one out and to jump above us in the draft order.
I don't want to insinuate anything, but I think going for the tie in that game is kind of like coaching to lose. So which one were you going for, sorry?
I'll take the Lions. I'm not happy about it.
You're taking the Lions. Okay. Gary, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go for the Lions as well. They showed a bit of signs of life against the Raiders. And with the Sanchez leading the Eagles, obviously we saw what happened against the Bucks. So, yeah, the Lions for me.
I've got to go with the Lions as well. They're coming off the back of two good games. The Eagles are completely in free fall. Mark Butfumble Sanchez is in at quarterback, so definitely the Lions for me. That's the early game. The middle of the evening game, Panthers at Cowboys. Brian?
All aboard the Cam train. The Panthers are secretly gathering a nice little neutral fan base right now. I like a lot of what they're doing on the field. I absolutely love what they're doing with touchdown balls, giving them to young kids in the crowd. They're certainly a team that I think many people would find it very hard to not like right now. So I'm going to pick the Panthers to stomp all over the Cowboys and have some turkey on the halfway line. How about that? Jed York.
Gary, how about you?
I'm going to go the opposite.
What?
I'm going to go for the Cowboys. They've won this fixture the last five. Yeah, they've won this fixture the last five times, and the vibes coming out of America over here at the moment are that Romo's going to lead them to an unbeaten rest of the season. So I'm going to jump on that Romo train and go for the Cowboys.
It's a very difficult call, isn't it? The Panthers are unbeaten so far. The Cowboys have been absolutely awful, but Romo hasn't been on the field. Now Romo's back on the field, they've got a win. It really is a coin toss this game. Panthers. I'll nail my cap to the Panthers, whatever you want to call it. Panthers win on that one. The final game of the Thanksgiving three is the Bears at the Packers. Brian?
I'm going to take Green Bay. They look to have steadied the ship again after what was a rough 3 weeks for them. The Bears are still... The Bears pushed Broncos quite hard on Sunday, but I'm going to definitely take the Packers in this one.
And Gary?
Yeah, I'm going to go for the Packers as well. I think they've, as Brian said, steadied the ship, and I think they're just going to push on now, and I think they might even end the rest of the season unbeaten.
They have stopped that losing skid that they were on. The game is at Lambeau as well. I've got to go with the Packers. Deepak's messaged his in. He's gone for the Lions in the first game against the Eagles. He's gone for Carolina against the Cowboys. And he's gone for the Packers, I quote, by a mile. So that's our picks for the Thanksgiving games, pick six. We'll have the rest of the pick six challenge in our show later on this week. That's it for this episode of the show. Thanks to Gavin and Kat for the two-minute drill questions. Thanks to AudioNautics.com for the music. The discussions will no doubt carry on Twitter at Frequency49 and on Facebook if you search the Frequency 49 show. We'll be back later this week with a preview of the Week 12 game against the Arizona Cardinals. It's time to say goodbye, boys.
Farewell for now.
Goodbye, boys.
On behalf of Brian, Deepak and Gary, I've been Paul McDonald, you've been the audience, and this has been the Frequency 49 show. Bye for now.
Plain is a real American.
American.